Blog Talk Radio.
Today I'm talking with J.D. Lakey. We're going to be talking about the Blackbead Chronicles and her other books, and we're also going to talk about other subjects. Hi, J.D. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me on.
I'm really happy to have you here. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
So I've written 5 books in the Blackbead Chronicles. I didn't start out as an author. I started out as an artist and gradually progressed to writing just because I couldn't find any books that I liked. So I thought, well, maybe I should write some. Maybe I'll write my books so I have something to read. So that's where it started.
Yeah, I understand that. I kind of did that with my – I started with fan fiction because – you know when you watch a TV show and they, I know it's very modern to have it all completely up to your imagination, but it would drive me crazy. It would be like, okay, that's the end. And I'm like, wait,
no,
what happened? Because the next show they go off to the next scenario and you're like, wait.
I remember as a kid getting sent off to bed and going, I would have written that differently. just in your head, you start reimagining the story for you, for your own personal agendas and where you would think that those, you know, especially being a woman in a man's world and the media is pretty much run by old white men. so women tend to be really frustrated with what's up on the screen. Even on the big screen and the small screen, so it's you have to write the stories that are that speak to you, and it's not ever written by a guy. It's got to be a woman writing it.
And
I mean,
you know,
God bless
really
her. Some men know how to write women, but not well.
Well, it's interesting because some of the shows, TV shows, I grew up watching that were very pro women and very, very good were written by men. And I didn't realize it until I was older. I mean, like That Girl, Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were written by guys. I mean, they were guys who understand women because, like, the two guys, they both had sisters and they understood all the relationship problems with their dad and their boyfriends because they heard it all the time from their sisters. So they really understood. But it's like, God, everything I loved, it's secondhand.
Right. It's guys observing women and interpreting what's going on in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a lot more complicated than guys really give us credit for.
Oh, yeah.
We tend to all be psychic. We tend to have these multidimensional brains that can think of things in 6 different directions, and it's a threatening thing for guys to know exactly how complicated we are. So we never mention it. We're very polite. We're very nice. Girls are nice. We're told to be nice. We never tell
sugar
men scary shit. We don't tell
sugar
them scary
and spice
stuff.
And everything nice.
Yes, exactly. And we play into that. We feed them the line, and they believe it because it makes them happy. And that's what we do. We're really good at making our men happy.
Yes. The gentle sex. The weaker sex.
Well,
yes.
Knew. The men are the weaker sex, if you must know. So, I mean, that's why I wrote Blackbead was I wanted to design a world that in which men and women were actualized, and it turned into a matriarchy society, and the men were warriors. It's how do you make a guy happy? Give him something to fight.
Here's a spear.
There's a spear, exactly. We didn't get too complicated. I didn't give them nuclear weapons. It's like, here's a spear. Go beat up a tree or something.
Don't start a war.
Don't start a war. Yeah, exactly. So we have to. We're humans. We need something to contend against. So in my world,
I have to say there are good guys out there, and not all guys are like that. You know?
No. It's just, you know, the nature of hormones and testosterone is like, it makes us sort of hardwired. And it isn't until, you know, you hit 45 and the hormones ease off that you realize just how much in control all that chemicals in your brain are. So, you know, God bless menopause. That's all I have to say.
Oh, God. Yeah, both for men and women.
Exactly. I mean, we all go through menopause. They call it something else for men, but it's the same thing. The hormones ease off, and, you know, you become a kinder and gentler person, I think, and less driven. You wake up and it's like who you were when you were 12. You suddenly remember that and go, yeah, that was cool when I was 12.
Most people do. Let's put it that way. Most people get kinder and gentler when they get past menopause.
Right.
Some of them stay just the same as they always were, but some of them.
I mean, you get hidebound and caught in a rut. And, you know, people who are not open to change have a hard time with, you know, the change in life. That's why they invented Viagra. And, you know, the biggest commercial on my radio is a testosterone replacement. It's like, really, dudes, chill out. Enjoy the change.
Yeah,
Figure out who you are, really.
My email isn't like, you can't tell from my actual email addy if I'm a male or female. So I get a lot of male stuff in it. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
There's a lot of pressure on guys with all the stuff they send to.
Oh yeah. It's the sexual prowess emails. It's like, wow, poor guys.
I know. I kind of, in a way, feel sorry for them because it's a lot to put onto one person's poor little ego. I mean, just not fair.
We're not kind to anybody. It's the consumerism and capitalism and the quest to be forever young is not kind to anyone. It's
commercials for Oil Valet where they have like 30-year-olds at the oldest talking about youthful skin.
Oh yeah. There's just so much pressure to stay young. We don't. I like to call myself a witch for that very reason. I like the concept of the old hag with the big nose and the protruding chin, and she's obviously 600 years old, and she has no illusion about being pretty anymore. It's all her quest is to be powerful and make a statement in the world. So. We just need to start shifting the planet so we have a different focus. And I think that's happening, actually.
They've been talking about that for a long time. I remember one of my books I found fascinating, I think I've read it 1,000 times, was Shirley MacLaine's Out on the Limb. And she was talking about the shift in the planet, and she wrote that in the 80s. When is the shift going to happen already?
You know, it has. We just are resisting it like crazy. It's like change is not a comfortable thing for anyone. And you know, are we waiting for the 80-year-old guys to die off so that we can, the younger generation have got it figured out. They just need to mature a little bit and get their voices out there. They're just fighting an uphill battle because the dialogue is being controlled by, you know, people who don't want you to take any kind of self power. So you feel
true.
Like you're fighting an uphill battle, but it's happening. It's happening.
And then there are the couple of 90-year-olds that are ahead of their time and are amazing, like Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, who are incredibly attuned to both men and women and have such respect and are sages, even though, you know, what, they're both comedic sages, but they're just, you know, you listen to them and you're like, God, these guys really understand men and women, and they understand, and they're in their 90s. I mean, it's just...
Sure. it's
hard to understand.
I wonder if it's the social systems in, like, Southern California, where it's so much more open. It's not a bad thing to be gay. Nobody shames you for being gay. It's open communities, and women have power. And then you get into the red states, and it's like, you know, the traditional women's roles have not progressed since the 1950s, and leave it to Beaver. It's like, well, they all want us to be June Cleaver with the pearls and the fluffy skirt and wearing heels in the house. It's like, you know, I never grew up that way. I grew up in Montana,
ooh,
where it's, you know, you were out in the field combining the wheat and gathering the cattle, and it didn't matter what your sex was. If you had two hands and two feet, you got out there and helped out. And it's like, I never grew up in a situation where you were expected to be a nice girl. So I never was.
Well, it's funny because I was I'm a Californian, native, and I lived back east for 3 years of my life as a kid, went from 9 to 12, and I realized I don't want to live in Ohio. I don't want to live in New Jersey. I want to go back home. And poor dad, he's like, we'll see if we get back home.
Yeah. I was a Navy wife, and I lived in, like, the South, and I lived in Virginia, and you know, I lived all over. And it's like, you would think that we would be some sort of universal kind of person as an American, but it's like the attitudes are totally different depending on what part of the country you live in. It's just, if you're working a blue-collar job on the East Coast, it's your set of values are totally different than if you're working a blue-collar job in, like, Oregon or Georgia. It's just, we're so diverse. And I don't want that to ever go away.
By the way. Just little disclaimer, nothing against Ohio or New Jersey. That was a 9-year-old's thoughts, okay?
There's different attitudes and different, the pace of life is different. It's just, and
oh,
you as a kid went, this
me.
Is, oh yeah, sure.
I mean, like, 9 years in California and all of a sudden you have totally different attitudes on the East Coast. It was culture shock.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I worked in Virginia for 8 years. Crazy. I mean, you've never met a more outrageous human being than somebody who's been raised in Pittsburgh. And it's like, wow. These people are crazy. But they're not. I mean, they're just... powerful, strong people.
Yeah,
and they have very set opinions.
Different attitude, completely
different.
Different
attitude.
And if you're a kid, and you're brought up as a, you know, pretty sheltered. I was pretty sheltered, 9-year-old, and you're brought up in that kind of environment, and then you all of a sudden you're in a totally different environment. It's like, night and day. You're just, you don't know.
Oh, yeah. The I had a friend who grew up in Pittsburgh, and she told a story of chasing her brother down the street in a nightgown with a kitchen knife because he had a fight. And I'm going, what? But, you know, that was Tuesday. In Pittsburgh, it was like no big deal. It's just a different mindset.
Wow. That really is a different mindset.
It's just, you know, they tell it like it is on the East Coast.
But
California,
it's funny.
We're too laid back.
We're
way laid back here.
We are way, way laid back.
Hard to get pinched when it's the sky's blue and the sun's warm. The wind is, like, cool, like today.
Well, it's so funny.
Beautiful day today.
When I made it in, when I was in college, when I, you know, when you're in college, you think you're an adult. You're not quite, but you think you are.
No.
And I was, it was like, it was very apathetic. It wasn't like now. I mean, when I was in college, it was Reagan era, so it was very apathetic. And I'm like, you know, either people wanted to, you know, destroy the government and blah, 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 or they didn't give a darn. And I was in the middle. I didn't want to destroy anything. I just wanted to say, no, I don't want nuclear power or something like that.
Sure,
I didn't want to hurt anybody. I just wanted to say what I believe. So it was either you were militant or you were apathetic. There was no in between, and it made me a little crazy.
So the whole conservative liberal thing, it's like,
yeah,
my college was we were still protesting Vietnam when I went to college. It's you know, Kent State was happening. We were it was pretty you were pretty divided about what side of the line you were on, and sort
yeah.
of like now.
Yeah, it was so. That's what I was thinking. It's changed so much that, you know, now we're protesting because we have to. As women, we have to, because to protect ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. It's mandatory. If you're a woman, you have to be an activist now. You have
yeah.
to choose a battle and fight it. It's just if
there's
you're
no
not,
choice.
Then you say there's no choice, because you know there's. They want to put us in burqa or put us, I don't know, take away our voting rights. You know, I just you imagine as a sci-fi author, you imagine the worst dystopian kind of future when you see these politicians come into power and you go, wow, we could go so bad so fast. We need to rethink this. So
yeah,
and you know,
right.
I think all women have that ability to. It's our job as moms, I think, is to imagine the very worst when we send our kids out into the world. So we're very good at it. So we imagine the very worst and try to stop it. And that's, I think, where you see the protests coming in now is
yeah.
how can I change the world? And you know, that's, you know, why I write books is how would I change the world and what kind of world would it be that I could raise daughters in and they could be powerful women in their own right and
yep.
still not take away the power of men. So that's,
yeah.
you know, that's it.
That's the big thing. It's a balance. I don't want to take power away from it. I just want
no,
because
I have
powerful.
A son and you, yeah, exactly. If you have sons, you don't want to treat them badly. So you have to imagine a world in which everybody's happy and everybody gets what they need.
That's why I never understood why the ERA was stopped back in the 70s, because all it said was that men and women are equal under the law. That was it. There
right.
was no other.
Right.
It wasn't about anything else. That was all it said. It was very simple. I mean, I was a kid. I was not even able to vote when that was going through. But I even asked my dad, I said, why isn't it going through? It's such a simple thing. He goes, because most men, and he's not including himself because my dad was ahead of his time, He goes, most men are scared to death to hear someone say that they're equal to women. I go, but what? And he goes, because they're idiots. I mean, my father was ahead of his time.
Well, they can't. They can't imagine a world. I mean, no. I think they feel guilty because they know just how badly they treat women, and if they think that if the shoe were on the other foot, that we would be just as terrible. But you know, we can't. We can't.
That's
like,
why I think
we have
equality
sons.
Is
we,
so
we
important.
We can't.
That's
right.
Why I think it should be equal, equal under the law. That's it. I don't think it should be a
right.
big Megillah. I don't think anybody should be adding other little additions to it. Just simple statement. That's it. That's it.
So, yeah. I like to tell people I don't want equality. I just want autonomy. I want to be
too.
Free.
Autonomy.
I don't want to
good.
Be equal to you. I want to have my own autonomy. I don't want you telling me what to do. It's like,
I know.
I firmly believe that there should be rules for girls and rules for boys, and they shouldn't intermingle. And you know, that's pretty much how I write my worlds when I write sci-fi. Is, you know, there's your rules and there's my rules.
We're at the 8-minute mark, so I thought I'd give you plenty of time to plug your book. And also, if you have any appearances, like conventions or anything that you have coming up, let people know where to get in touch with you.
Okay. So I'm getting ready to release Stormchild, which is the fourth book of the Black Bead Chronicles. There's Black Bead, Bodice Tears, Spider Wars, and Stormchild. And we're coming out at the Irvine Regal Con convention, June 24th and 25th, with the publicity tour kind of thing. If you want to get a hold of any of my books, they're on Amazon. You want to give me reviews, Goodreads, NetGalley, Amazon, they all take reviews. And, you know, all us independent publishers, we live and die by a good review.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've been talking about is what I built a world in which women and men have roles, and it's a warrior society, but it's a matriarchy, and everybody is psychic in some way. The world is violent and deadly, and the dominant predator has the ability to send out psychic calls and draw the people into their jaws. So it requires a certain skill set to survive in this world. And so I've got this main character, Siobhan, who is the penultimate psychic in the dome societies, and she has her own way of solving her problems, and everybody seems to take to her. She seems to be a character that people love to love. So I'm getting a lot of really good feedback on that. What else? I don't know. Read my books.
Do you have a... That's a good one. Do you have a website that people can get in touch with you? Also, can you give your Facebook page that you would like people to get in touch with you at?
The Facebook page is J.D. Lakey. My website is J.D. Lakey. Just Google it. You'll find me. I think I'm Dark V Star on Twitter. it's J.D. Lakey. If you go to Amazon.com and type in J.D. Lakey, it'll take you to some links, and you can find me there. But I'm out in the world.
You're out in the world. Okay. And do you have anything that's coming up? You said you got your new book coming out. Do you know when that's out?
We're expecting to. We're waiting on the cover art, but I'm expecting it to get up and published by the 1st of June so that we can bring copies of it to RegalCon in Irvine. And book five is at the editors. So the work is not done. I still have Siobhan following her adventure, so it doesn't seem to want to end. You know, you write a book and you go, this is the last episode. No, I still haven't found the last episode yet. She's still out there endeavoring.
Even when you end a series, I'm just starting to write a series, but as a reader, when you end a series, you like, in your head, it never ends.
Right. That they go
on. If you like it.
Yeah, the characters have a life, and you've created these characters. They literally take on a life of their own, and towards, you know, book five, they pretty much write themselves. So it's sort of interesting. It's like this game of opening up your subconscious and just spilling stuff out, and amazing things happen. So I go and reread my stuff and go, wow, that's pretty cool. I don't know where that came from, but that's pretty cool.
Have you ever, I was recently doing a book reading of one of my older books, and have you ever like was reading and you're like, did I write this?
Exactly. All the time. I go back and reread my stuff and go, wow, where did that come from? That's just, wow.
Or that passage was really good.
And then you go, wow, this is like a Rorschach test of what's going on in my subconscious. And
yeah, exactly.
You find it's really revealing and like, oh, wow. And then you go, wow, this could be an allegory for this and this. It's like you're a... If you want to, you can dissect your work and take it down to all sorts of levels. It's what seemed to be a simple adventure turns into this allegory for the greater world and humankind. And it's just really fascinating, really interesting.
And you didn't even know you did it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wow, I'm cool. How cool am I?
It's true. Sadly, we've come to the end. I want to thank you for being on the show, JD. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. This is fun.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Thank you.